we all know that there are so many different groups of people that are feeling a little disenfranchised, a little separated, a little challenged. And so one of the things that we did was we came up with our flag display, which speaks to all of those areas, well, some of those areas, not all of them, but some of the areas where people are feeling separate and disenfranchised, and so we made a statement for that. And what we're trying to do this year is to kind of wrap in another layer of how we can step forth in honoring and making it even more plain how welcoming and accepting and in it together, because that's what we believe. We believe that we are interconnected and that this life is part of all of us moving together in our individual expression. So this we've just started Black History Month. And so what I wanted to do this month was each week share some information about some of the historical figures in the New Thought movement who've made a difference. But first I wanted to speak directly to Black History Month. And so I have something to read to you to share about how it came about. So this is from the government website. This is what their statement. It says this: the Library of Congress, the National Archives and Records Administration, National Endowment for the Humanities, the National Gallery of Art, National Park Service, Smithsonian Institution, and United States Holocaust Memorial Museum join in paying tribute to the generations of African Americans who struggled with adversity to achieve full citizenship in American society. As a Harvard-trained historian, Carter G. Woodson, like W.E.B. Du Bois before him, believed that truth could not be denied and that reason would prevail over prejudice. His hopes to raise awareness of African Americans' contributions to civilization was realized when he and the organization he founded, the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, conceived and announced Negro History Week in 1925. The event was first celebrated during a week in February 1926 that encompassed the birthdays of both Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. The response was overwhelming. Black history clubs sprang up, teachers demanded materials to instruct their pupils, and progressive whites, not simply white scholars, and philanthropists stepped forward to endorse the effort. By the time of Woodson's death in 1950, Negro History Week had become a central part of African American life, and substantial progress had been made in bringing more Americans to appreciate the celebration. At mid-century, mayors of cities nationwide issued proclamations noting Negro History Week. The Black Awakening of the 1960s dramatically expanded the consciousness of African Americans about the importance of Black history, and the Civil Rights Movement focused Americans of all color on the subject of the contributions of African Americans to our history and culture. The celebration was expanded to a month in 1976, the nation's bicentennial. President Gerald R. Ford urged Americans to seize the opportunity to honor the too often neglected accomplishments of Black Americans in every area of endeavor throughout our history. That year, 50 years after the first celebration, the association held the first African American History Month. By this time, the entire nation had come to recognize the importance of Black history in the drama of the American story. Since then, each American president has issued an African American History Month proclamation. And the association, now the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, continues to promote the study of Black history all year. And so I need to say this. I know that this is a very small thing that we're doing for a very large issue. But I think that each and every step that we take in taking a stand to expand our awareness, take a stand for knowing that what we believe is that we're working towards a world that works for everyone, no matter what, in anything that we do, we move that forward. And so what I thought we would do this month is one of my colleagues in Dallas put together a series of videos to talk about some of the great contributions of African Americans to our New Thought movement. And so we're going to show that video, and it's a very brief thing to talk, and each week we're going to learn about a couple of great contributors. And so here's our video for this week. Oh. That's in a minute. There it is. There you go. There it is. Yay.
Here's a little-known Black history science of mind fact. Jamaican-born Marcus Mosiah Garvey Jr. is well known as a businessman, journalist, Pan-Africanist, and powerful orator of the early 1900s. As such, he attracted thousands of followers to his Black nationalist movement that became known as Garveyism. As founder of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, Garvey encouraged African Americans to be proud of their race and promoted cultural identity through his Back to Africa campaign. But did you know that Garvey was also a follower of the New Thought movement, as well as a student of the ideas and philosophies of religious science? In fact, Garvey studied the same New Thought philosophers as religious science founder Ernest Holmes and his brother Fenwick, and often quoted their teachings. He also was inspired by Divine Science co-founder Nona Brooks. Even the philosophy of transcendentalism, led by writer Ralph Waldo Emerson, resonated with Garvey. He excelled in merging racial philosophical concepts and science of mind principles while addressing the Black condition in America. The strong philosophical beliefs in self-mastery, determination, and willpower that Garvey preached to Black people aligned perfectly with the newly emerging teachings of science of mind. In many of Garvey's speeches and writings, he often urged his followers to get a scientific knowledge of religion. His message was clear: liberate the minds of men, and ultimately, you will liberate the bodies of men. Another instrumental Jamaican in science of mind is Dr. Elma Lumsden, who founded the Temple of Light Church of Religious Science in Kingston, Jamaica in 1981. An engaging speaker and master teacher, Dr. Elma is also known for her simple yet dynamic words of wisdom, such as, until you can walk on water, take a boat. And
amen.
Life is a school, and we're not on holiday. Due to her leadership and diligence, Lumsden helped the religious science become recognized as one of 12 key religions in Jamaica. Dr. Elma Lumsden and Marcus Garvey, Black evolutionaries in science of mind.
There you go. And so I realize this is a small thing that we can do, but it's interesting to me to learn about how instrumental these people have been in our movement, and how, and I'm not going to get into any of what should have been, how it should have, whatever. We're going to start now. We're going to appreciate and honor their contributions and just know that we are blessed because of the work they did. And I'm still waiting to be asked to speak at that church in Jamaica. I can't wait for that. Hopefully the phone's going to ring. All right, so here we are, a new month, and this year we are on an unfolding adventure. Life is an adventure, and it's time to live courageously. That's our theme for the year. And so as we move into this month of February, which is traditionally a month where we talk about love, you know, with Valentine's Day and all of that, we're talking about the courage to love. That's our theme for the month, and that's my talk for today. And the idea of it is this: you know, love is all around us. We are like completely bombarded with messages of love. Watch any movie, read any book, listen to any song, right? There's this whole idealization about love. Life is all about love, and we know that. We know that the presence of love is healing. We know that the power of love is transformative. We know that. And yet, what happens is that we're not taught how to do it, right? There's no class on how to love. There's no curriculum on how to be loving. And I love the reading for today. And this book that's coming in this week, actually tomorrow, is Louise Hay's Life Loves You, which is such a beautiful book that we're reading this month. And what she talks about is how as children, and especially, we move into those developmental stages. And once you get out of the baby stage and into the toddler stage, Children have an innate capability of loving themselves. Have you ever been around a toddler in front of a mirror? Where they're like, just, they kiss themselves in the mirror. Have you ever seen that? That's so adorable. And I've seen child after child do that, you know, that they just love themselves. And then something happens as they go through their development and they start to grow, and then that kind of gets clouded over, and there's this, the picture I have of it is there's a fog that settles on our ability to love ourselves. It's not concrete, but it's a fog. And so it was speaking to me as I was driving in this morning over the hill down from Fallbrook and coming in to see the fog and the mist in the hills, right? It's amazing. I love when we have weather. Are you excited? We've got weather. It's like, yay, we've got weather, you know? But when the fog comes in and those clouds come over, you can't tell that there's a mountain there. You know, the plateau was missing today. Like, I couldn't see it at all. And so that's kind of what it's like as we are socialized, as we learn about from our parents mirroring from those structures around us, when they mirror how we are to love ourselves, because they didn't learn either. And so what we learn is that we have to do stuff to gain love, that we have to be a certain way to be loved. Those are the messages that come in, that it's conditional. But it's not the truth of your being. The truth of your being is that you are love, is that you are the power and the presence of love, that all of creation comes forth from the divine life because of love. God created the universe out of an expression of love, and it was so much love, it was the Big Bang. And Craig loves it when I say it, but it wasn't a little bang. It was a Big Bang, right? And that's the power of love that purported this whole universe into being, and you were part of that creation. And so at our core, there's only love. And yet, it's really hard for so many of us to look ourselves in the mirror. It's very hard for us to be present with where we are, who we truly are, and what's going on with us. We put on a facade. We put out a picture that everything's okay. We show up, you know. My mom always used to say, put your lipstick on and go on out in the world, you know. And I'm like, okay, somehow that means I'm supposed to not be the sad mess that I feel like I am sometimes. And then I have to pretend that everything's okay and go out into the world. That's what was mirrored to me. And I've seen it over and over and over again. But it's not loving to ourselves to pretend that we're something that we're not. It's not loving to ourselves to push down and pretend stuff's not happening, or we're not hurt, or I'm not feeling good, or whatever it is. We try and pretend that's not true. And so all of those feelings get kind of pushed into this closet within our consciousness. And let me tell you, the closet gets really full. It gets kind of confused and complicated. And so when we start to have our relationships out in the world, that is what is coming forward. That is what is being mirrored to us. And so Louise Hay talks about how life is a mirror, and how that mirror, our relationships are mirrors to us. And so the picture I was having this week was that I kept having dreams too, that I'm like lost in the fun house, you know, with the mirrors. That hall of mirrors, and how do I get out of here, and what am I seeing? And there's like so many different things coming at me, and are they behind me? Is it there? And I had these dreams over and over again, because what happens, and what I think it's telling me, is that, not that I analyze dreams, but the idea is that there are things that are coming to us that we're calling into our experience for us to heal. So those challenging relationships, those frustrating moments, those difficulties that we go through are actually mirrors for something that wants to be healed within us. And so no longer do we get to blame the other person. Oh, they're being a jerk. And stand in our righteousness. They were wrong, you know. And so that's why this path is not always the easiest one. Science of mind, religious science, isn't for everybody. Because one of the things that we need to do is we need to have a relationship with ourselves, so much so that we can check in and say, is that mine? You know, what is this? What's in it for me to look at when we hit a challenging moment? And it could be a number of things. It could be the idea that we need to stand up for ourselves a little bit more. It could be that we don't appreciate our own gifts, and so no one else in the outside world is going to be able to appreciate us either. It may be that we have an expectation of ourselves to be some level of, I'm going to use the air quotes, perfect, right? And nobody is perfect. There's no possible way to be what our ideal of perfect is. And so we call these situations into our lives, we call these people into our lives, we call these relationships into our lives to allow us to realize something about ourselves. I remember when I was getting married way back, how long we've been married, but that I remember having this whole idea. Everyone was joking about, oh, ball and chain, oh, you're going to be stuck, oh, there you go. You know, all those jokes that they do around weddings, right? And I kept saying, no, I expect to be freer. And they were like, what? And I'm like, no, marriage means freedom to me. And someone was like, it was a friend from my old life. So they're the only people who call me Kathy, by the way. Anybody from Massachusetts who knows me from before 1995 calls me Kathy. And they were like, Kathy, you're crazy. I can hear them in my head saying, Kathy, you're crazy. And I'm like, no, you know what this means? It means that if I have a commitment with somebody, what it means is that I am committed to doing my work to be clear about our relationship. If I'm making the commitment to live a life together, to build a life with someone, what it means for me is that we are both in it to win it, which means that we are going to find the freedom in the center of that connection. And it's possible, as you deepen in your understanding of who you are, to find freedom even when you're in relationship with someone else. And it takes work, and it comes around in cycles. And then we have to be committed to it. But I'll tell you what, love is one of the most powerful things that's alive in this world. And it's one of the biggest gifts that we have. How many words are there for love? There's a million different kinds of love, right? But like I said, going back to that bombardment, we have this idea of what the songs are telling us and what, just watch, February is also one of my other favorite months for a couple reasons. One is the rom-coms that go like constantly on TV, you know what I mean? I love romantic comedy movies. I love those situational things. But what I woke up to a number of years ago was that they're showing one plastic version of love. And if that's all the education we get about love, let me tell you, our lives don't look like romantic comedies, you know? I'm not a you've got male girl. That doesn't work that way, you know? It doesn't work. But we have great love and great possibilities and great opportunities to experience wonderful, deepening moments of love in our lives if we are true to who we are. And so I found a beautiful story of an act of love that came this week. As many know that this week was for our friends in the, I've been praying for all our friends anywhere east of here. Right? Because there's this polar vortex that has settled in the country. And the central part of this country has seen temperatures that were unprecedented. And in years and years and years, they haven't seen, and it was 50 below in Chicago. And so I found this story from the New York Times I wanted to share with you. And it was about a Chicago woman who was motivated, inspired to share love because she loved the people in her city. And so what she did was that she got 30 hotel rooms for homeless people during this week. And so this is the story. I just thought I'd read it because it's pretty good. But you know what? I remembered my glasses this week. All right, as temperatures plunged to life-threatening lows this week, more than 100 homeless people in Chicago unexpectedly found themselves with food, fresh clothes, and a place to stay after a local real estate broker intervened. The broker, Candace Payne, 34, said it was a spur-of-the-moment decision to help. It was 50 below, and I knew they were going to be sleeping on ice, and I had to do something, she said on Saturday. Ms. Payne contacted hotels and found 30 rooms available at the Amber Inn for Wednesday night at $70 a room. Temperatures in Chicago reached lows of minus 25 and minus 26 on Wednesday and Thursday, according to the National Weather Service. After Ms. Payne paid for the rooms on a credit card, she asked on her Instagram account for anyone who could help transport the homeless people. Soon she had a caravan of cars, SUVs, and vans with volunteer drivers. We met at Tent City, where all the homeless people set up tents and live on the side of the expressway, Ms. Payne said. It's not a secret. The homeless have been living there for years. She asked as many people as she could to go with her to the Amber Inn as donations were pouring into her Cash App account. Ms. Payne met two pregnant women and a family of five in the first group of homeless people who went to the inn. We had to accommodate everyone. It was really overwhelming, Ms. Payne said. They were so appreciative, they couldn't wait to get in a bath and lay in a bed. Ms. Payne bought toiletries, food, prenatal vitamins, lotions, deodorants, and snacks, and made care packages to help make the people feel comfortable. Restaurants donated trays of food, and many people called the inn. She said she'd spent about $4,700 so far on the rooms and other materials. People from the community, they all piggyback off Candace, said Robin Smith, the manager of the Amber Inn. Other people started calling and anonymously paying for rooms, she added, and Ms. Smith lowered the price to accommodate more people. What started out as 30 rooms doubled to 60. The rooms were only supposed to be occupied until Thursday when temperatures in Chicago were expected to moderate. But with the donations, Ms. Payne had received more than $10,000 so far. She had been able to house the people in the hotel and feed them until Sunday. I'm a regular person, Ms. Payne said. It all sounded like a rich person did this, but I'm just a little black girl from the South Side. I thought it was unattainable, but after seeing this and seeing people from all around the world, that just tells me that it's not unattainable. We can do this together. Ms. Payne wants to organize other ways to help homeless people in Chicago. This was a temporary fix, and it has inspired me to come up with more of a permanent solution, Ms. Payne said, before she received a call on her other line from J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois. He thanked me, Ms. Payne said. He said it was one of the biggest acts of kindness we've seen in a long time. All right, so, right? Beautiful. 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 And it's my intention for us to use our tithe this week to go to that program to support them and what they're doing. This is the thing. When we are inspired, we're inspired by love. When we are inspired to create something, when we are inspired to do an act of kindness, when we are inspired to try something new, it all comes from that inner divine spark, that inner connection of love. It's there for us. And what happens is that these relationships that are mirrors and all of that complicated stuff that we stuff in and don't deal with, what happens is that it just bleeds out into our relationships. And so often when we're with people, when we're with others in our relationships, we can't have a pure love connection. We can't be clear because we've got all of these things that are going on in our own heads, not only about this other person, but about ourselves. And so how often when we're listening to someone, when we're with them, are we really hearing them? How often when do we allow ourselves to be listening to our own self? How often do we look in the mirror and see us for who we are? I was inspired by Louise Hay's book this week, and it's a little bit funny, I have to say, because one of the great things that Louise Hay did in her great life and her great work that is a huge gift to all of us, I think, is that she talks about affirmations, right? She teaches us how to do the work and how to begin to do the work. And one of the great exercises that she has people do is one that I can't do without laughing. And I'll admit it, you know, I am a kid of my generation. I'm a Gen Xer. I grew up with Saturday Night Live. And everybody who has ever watched Saturday Night Live from the 80s and 90s knows Stuart Smalley, right? Poor Stuart Smalley screwed us all up for doing affirmations, right? So if you don't know this, you should YouTube it because he's hilarious. But it's a woo-woo new thought kind of a guy who's sitting in front of who had a little TV show, and he would sit in front of the mirror before his guest comes out, and he would say to himself, you're good enough, you're smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like you, you know? and from this really cheesy way. And so then, of course, he is like a shaking mess, you know, who you can tell that he doesn't think any of that about himself, you know? And then he goes to try and have this conversation with somebody else, and it's just, you know, it's funny. We got to poke fun at ourselves, too, you know? But what that did was that I couldn't, when I first came into the religious science movement and science of mind, I couldn't say an affirmation without cracking up, you know, because it just sounds like Stuart Smalley saying that, you know. So here's Louise. So cut back to Louise Hay. And in this book, the main thing that she teaches us is she teaches us to look in the mirror and say, I love you. And how hard it is to do that. Now, it's a practice that, you know, on one level I'm laughing at because all I can see is Stuart Smalley, you know, but I realized at some point that was the resistance I had, going back to Stuart Smalley, was a resistance I had to being present with myself in the mirror, looking at me exactly as I am, and saying, I love you. And it's one of the most powerful exercises we have, is to find a way around all of the junk that we think about ourselves, all of the things that we think we've done wrong, all the things that we think we're not good enough, all the things that we think we've made mistakes on or we can't fix or the people we've hurt or whatever the story is we're carrying about ourselves, about not being enough, we can't stand in the mirror and look at ourselves and say, I love you. Now, then there's an extended version of that exercise where you do it naked. But we'll wait till week 4 to do that one. I won't have you start with that one. I crack myself up. So, but the call is this, that we need to start to clean up what we think about ourselves. We need to change our mindset in order for us to be able to be a channel of divine love in this life. We need to be able to understand that it's our mindset that keeps us blocked from love. It's our mindset, that our sense of limitation, that's going to keep us from being connected. And now I'm talking about all the different love. There's parental love, and there's familial love, and there's friendship, and then there's passion, and then all of the different kinds of love. There's, you know, I think there's as many words for love as the Eskimos have for snow, right? There's so many different kinds and concepts of love. And what Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, says is, he says this: do we desire to live in a world peopled with friends who love us, surrounded by things beautiful and pleasing? There is but one way, and this way is as certain as that the sun shines. Daily, we must control all thought that denies the real, affirm the divine presence within us. Then, as the mist disappears before the sun, so shall adversity melt before the shining radiance of our exalted thought. Yeah. Yeah, right? So that's the work. That's the work. What the work is, it's to get us to the place where we know the truth so well that the sun that we are shines and dissipates that mist. It dissipates that fog that we've been carrying since we moved out of the kissing the mirror stage and into the, you know, just look at preteens and teens. You know, what happens between 18 months and 10 when they start to judge themselves already? Now, in the best society, in the highest idea, what we would know, what we would think is that our parents and our schools and all those people would mirror that love to us, that loving ourselves. But you know what? They weren't mirrored it either. So they don't know how to do it. And so they can't teach us. That's why we don't learn how to do this, is because they didn't know either. And the generation before them and the generation before them, they didn't know how. But we are called in this moment to wake up to the fact that enough is enough. It's time for us to learn how to love. It's time for us to see through all of this junk and to know the truth of who we are, to love ourselves enough to be a presence of love for others. And one of the ways that I'm going to encourage us to do that, now the Louise Hay mirror exercise is a good one, and you can try that this week, and don't hear me laughing in the back, because that'll be me doing my own. I love you. You're good enough. You're smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like you. Yeah. But I came across a a meditation program. I'm teaching the meditation class here at the center, and so I'm looking out in the world. You know, YouTube has amazing meditations, and there is an app for your phone called Insight Timer. And I came across this meditation on Insight Timer this week that I thought was perfect. It was a bridge from doing affirmations to being a presence there with them. And so there's a woman, I want to give her credit because I didn't come up with this. There's a woman named Sarah Blondin on Insight Timer. And what she does is she does this meditation where she leads you in a meditation, and it's about listening, right? So one of the ideas that I think about this is that we don't listen to ourselves enough, that we're not plain, clear enough with how we truly are to be able to love ourselves where we are, to give ourselves what we need. There was a meme that went around a while ago that I kept sharing over and over and over again because it said something. It had a picture of a woman with her hands over her heart, and it said, "Of course you feel sad right now. You've been through a lot, you know. Of course you're angry. You've had an experience, right?" And so often we think that when we have these negative reactions or we have these negative experiences that we need to pretend we're too spiritual for that. I know all's divine, God's all there is, so it's all good. Just somebody stole my car, but it's all good. You know, like, I mean, come on, who are we? You know, you can't deny your experience. You can't deny what you're feeling. But we have to remember that that's just an experience. It's not the truth of who we are. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to feel disappointed. But all that does is the point of those emotions are to take us to a place of understanding that it truly is okay, but you have to kind of get through that to get to that place where you know it's okay. And one of the ways that we do it is by listening to ourselves. When we stop pretending that we're okay and we allow ourselves some time with ourselves, which is the biggest gift of love that you could give, just some presence with yourself, and you start to listen, then you can take a step in moving through it. Follow? All right, so this is the exercise. It's saying to yourself, "I love you, I'm listening." Right? "I love you, I'm listening." And so what she does, we're going to try this here, is I'm going to have you close your eyes if you're comfortable. And yes, this is a little woo-woo, and yes, this is really powerful, and we're going to do it anyways, all right? You with me? Okay, so I want you to put your hands on your heart and take a breath. And you're going to create a little bubble for yourself right where you are in your chair. You're sitting in a bubble all by yourself. And you can say silently to yourself, "I love you. I'm listening." And take a breath. Again, "I love you. I'm listening." And just notice what comes up. Notice where you are right now, without judging it, without calling it good or bad or anything, just allowing it to be. "I love you. I'm listening." And so when you're ready, you can come on back. It's a simple practice, but it's a powerful one. Because when we can do that for ourselves, we can start to do that for our beloved. When you can have the attitude, you don't have to say it to the person who you're in relationship with, friend, barista, grocery clerk. You don't have to walk up to them and say, "I love you, I'm listening." But when you have that, could you imagine? We're all going to go to Starbucks and I'll do that. I'll be hilarious. But we're those weird people down the street. No, but when we do that, but when you have that attitude and you move into a place of relationship with someone else, you're no longer acting or in relationship from all the crap that you stuffed in the closet. You're no longer just trying to figure out how to school them and how they've done you wrong. You're no longer trying to figure out how, you know, what's going on and why that. No, you're present with someone. When you can say, "I love you, I'm listening," and be present with someone else, there's only that divine-to-divine contact. Because all of our relationships are communion of spirit to spirit. That's why we've got them. Because God wants to be connected. It wants to be expressed as love. And that's the truth of who we are. And so what we're going to do this month is we're going to step up and have the courage to love. We're going to have the find the courage to love ourselves as we are. We're going to find the courage to be a space of love, to allow acts of inspiration and love to come forward in our lives. And we're going to learn how to navigate our life from that place of connection, because that's what it's all about. And so I hope you're in it with me. Yes? Yes? Are we awake? Yes? And it takes just that courage to take that first step. And as we do that, we find the courage to love. And so it is.